Sure. Give you a little background on myself. Nick Hammett, live in the middle of Missouri, work for Neogen. So I'm a key accounts manager at Neogen. I've been with Neogen about 4 years, started off as a territory manager in Missouri and surrounding states. Then I was a regional manager for the western half of the US, and now I handle key accounts, which are just our largest commercial beef and dairy accounts. So it's been an interesting position that I get to work with some of the largest beef and dairy operations all across the country, and some of the really big name innovative operations that, kind of everybody would really love to work with. So it's a great position.
That's awesome. So, sounds like a lot of fun. I know you get a lot of cool conversations and experiences with that that really, add to your experience in the beef industry. So that's very neat. Well, this article we're talking about bull selection from the genetic standpoint and then combining that with, physical selection and just really how do we use all the tools in the toolbox to make that purchase, make that selection decision. So with your experience on the genetic testing and just the genetic side in general. Start off by telling me how has genetic testing impacted or changed the way that bull buyers select their seed stock?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if every commercial cattleman's really aware of the value of genomic testing at the seed stock level, but most of the seed stock producers are. And as long as you have trust in your seed stock operator, I think that is really the main point of the whole objective is just know the seed stock guy's doing the right thing. We've been genomically enhancing EPDs for, oh, probably close to a decade now. So what that means for the commercial guy is that when you go to a bull sale and you buy a bull and you see maybe two bulls at different sales. One has genomically enhanced EPDs and the other one doesn't. The one with genomically enhanced EPD just has a higher accuracy value on those EPDs. So if you're going to that sale and you're buying a bull for heifers and you need a Cavanese bull, you can rest more assuredly that there's going to be less change in that bull's actual Cavanese value if he's been genetically tested. So it's really changed the game for the seed stock operators in terms of they can get back data faster because you can genetically test a bull the day he hits the ground if you want to. You could send in a sample on that animal and get back as much genomic information as you would have as if you'd collected phenotypes or weights and measures on about 20 different calves. So it's allowed the seed stock guy to make a lot more rapid progress, but it's also allowed the commercial guy to just rest more assured that he's buying what he thought he was indeed buying.
So, walk me through a little bit of the in-depth difference. Like you said, genetically enhanced EPDs have been around for 10 years or so. EPDs themselves have been around for much longer. And guys still aren't quite sure how to utilize those in some cases in their selection process. You mentioned that you can test that bull the day he hits the ground. The EPDs that we have used for, several years. Outside of being genetically enhanced, I know they are based around progeny, the years of production that that bull encounters, and just over time, those numbers being more verified and being more accurate. What is the difference between the EPD process and the genetically enhanced EPD process to actually get that data?
Yeah, so a typical bull without genomically testing him is going to get accuracy. So accuracy is something not often printed in bull sale catalogs, but sometimes is. It's measured on a scale from 0 to 100. 100 means perfect accuracy. That EPD on average is pretty well dead on. Obviously, you still have an average and that normal shape bell curve for every trait, but we're really good at predicting the average of that bull. So a typical yearling bull, when he's not genomically enhanced, he hasn't been DNA tested, gets that accuracy from his pedigree. So how much we know about his entire pedigree, but primarily his sire and his dam, and then individual weights and measures that you would have sent in on that bull. So let's take birth weight, for example. If you were to have a typical yearling bull and he was not genomically enhanced, his birth weight accuracy is going to be 0.15 to 0.2. So we're talking 15% to 20% accurate. Generally, once we send in that DNA sample, so what we're doing with the DNA sample is actually testing what genes that bull is carrying. What we're doing with the genetic evaluation is using all the information we have to predict what genes that bull is carrying and going to ultimately pass on to his progeny. So genomically testing these animals allows us to test for exactly what genes they're carrying. And what that does is raise that accuracy to about a 0.4 or 40%. So you're roughly gaining 20% accuracy by genomically testing those animals.
Gotcha. So whenever you're talking to someone who is used to just going off of VPDs and a basic knowledge, or used to looking at a bull and kind of combining, hey, what are these numbers? Or what are they supposed to say? What am I seeing? And then you bring in the genetic aspect of that, whether it's a genetically or a genetically enhanced EPD or just general genetic testing, how are producers able to then change maybe how they're looking at that bull, or has it made them have a different selection process because of the extra information, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I don't know if it necessarily changes their selection process. It should just change their belief in the accuracy of the numbers that they're looking at. You know, the process probably stays the same, but you can rest more assured that those numbers are more accurate. Really, we're to the point in the seed stock industry where for most of the major breeds, I would say 80% of the bulls sold probably are genomically tested. It's to the point where the high-end commercial cattlemen, you know, you don't necessarily have to know what it means or how it's calculated or how it changes, but most of them do know that it is important. It's important for that seed stock breeder to be doing that for them, and they seek out those seed stock breeders who are testing. So, vast majority of seed stock breeders are testing anymore. Not all of them, definitely, but the vast majority are. So, and the vast majority who do test put that information in their bull sale catalog. They say, we are testing. A lot of times they'll put a logo on those bulls in the sale catalog saying, here's the test that they had, just so that that commercial cattleman knows that those animals have been tested and that accuracy is higher for those animals.
Gotcha. What does the testing process itself consist of, include, provide?
Yeah, so it varies quite a bit by breed association. So everything done on registered bulls is done through the breed association. So there's different levels of test at some breed associations. Some of them have what's called a low density test. Some of them have a high density test. When we're talking about test, we're generally talking about the number of markers or SNPs on that test. So a lot of times you may see a 50K test, which means it has 50,000 SNPs, or a 100K test, which means it has 100,000 SNPs. So a lot of breed associations have different levels. You know, as long as they've been tested, they're better than being not tested. But obviously, the more information we get, the higher density chip we can get, the more information and greater the accuracy is going to be. So most of them have pretty well a standardized test for bulls. Most of them are doing a pretty high density test on bulls. And you'll see that, and the cost varies by breed association. I'm going to say from $25 to $50, somewhere in that ballpark.
So you said that you could test a calf the day it hits the ground. What is the typical time frame of testing? And is there any difference at all in the results that you get based upon when that animal's tested?
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, that calf's genes are its genes. Obviously, there's some environmental factors that may turn certain genes on, certain genes off, which is really complicated, and we don't have a great, no one has a great handle on that. But that animal's genes are going to test the same, whether you test him at a year of age or 10 years of age. You know, it varies quite a bit as to when folks test them. We do have a lot of seed stock breeders who just know they're testing everything. So they're taking a sample at birth. A lot of times they'll take that ear punch right where they're going to put that ear tag in, and they'll just put that ear tag right through that small hole that the ear punch makes. We have others that maybe they want to wait till weaning, branding, yearling, just so they know I definitely want to keep this one as a breeding animal, so I want to invest the money in testing that one and maybe not this one. So we have some people that pick and choose and wait till later in life, but some people do just every single one of them really early in life.
Gotcha. So you already kind of talked about just the increased accuracy of genetically enhanced EPDs. I've talked to several producers, and they're doing testing, they're not doing testing, they're doing a little bit of everything. And I've asked them, how reliable do you see the genetically enhanced EPD compared to real life production on the animal, and how accurate is this data? And there's varied opinions on that, obviously, depending upon who you talk to. Across the board, to me, I don't know that we can get 100% accurate. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can confirm that for me. But how reliable, whenever you're looking at true production performance, would you say that a genomically enhanced EPD is at that stage of life of that animal, whenever you're selecting that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the best tool we have. I think we really need to manage expectations when we're looking at genetic performance values and trying to match them to phenotypes, because the highest heritability for traits, say growth traits, carcass traits, is maybe around 40%, which means 40% of that animal's phenotype is attributed to its genetics, which means 60% of what you see, weigh, measure is actually attributed to the environment. So even if we did as good as we could possibly do on the genetic side, the best we're going to do is account for about 40% of the phenotype of that animal. And those are on the really highly heritable traits. The maternal traits are even lower in terms of their heritability than that. So good news is, if there's heritability, it means we can make improvement. We do need to keep measuring and making that improvement. Bad news is, environment counts for a huge portion of everything that we see. So, we do have a lot of folks that say, well, this one's supposed to be really high growth, but it came out like this. Well, the environment has something really big to play in that. Plus, you have subclinical illnesses of both the dam, the calf. There's so many factors that play into what you actually see, weigh, or measure on an individual animal. It's never going to be perfect in terms of predicting that animal's performance with genetics or genomics, but it's the best tool we really have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And your comment a minute ago about sometimes the environment turns some of those genes on and off. How do you compare those two thought processes of the environment playing a bigger role in the performance versus the environment having genetic contribution? Can you kind of explain just how both of those concepts can be evaluated?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the environment plays a role, whether it's how much feed you give something's going to determine how much it weighs, what the weather is, how much energy it's burning just fighting heat or fighting the cold is going to decrease its gain. And I think we can all understand that. We try to control those differences in terms of our genetic analysis by contemporary grouping. So we say these animals were all treated the same. The differences are largely due to their genetic differences, not necessarily their environmental differences. Even that has some challenges. There, like I said, there's subclinical illness. There's all kinds of things that could why this calf maybe didn't have quite as much opportunity as a calf standing right next to him in the same pasture. But that's what we try to do, is minimize those environmental differences so that we can get at their true genetic value in a genetic evaluation. Then you kind of mentioned like epigenetics, where there is environmental factors that maybe turn certain genes on, certain genes off. Where I've really witnessed this is with clone cattle. I've looked at clone cattle throughout, I worked with them at an operation I was at, or I've seen them just out in the club calf industry, and it seems like the clones never act exactly or breed exactly as true or the same as that original one. And I believe it's because there's certain genes turned on and off by things that we probably don't even know. Whether it's temperature or feed or what type of management is turning these genes on and off, we don't have a great handle on that. But there is something going on within our environment that allows those genes to either be expressed or be suppressed. And I don't know that anyone has a great handle on that part.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Would you say overall, then, whenever you're looking at the impact that genetic testing and these GEEPDs can have, to say in a perfect environment, these bulls would be competitive in this regard, and anything beyond that is kind of subject to the management and the environment and the pieces that we're going to experience. To say that, you're starting your baseline, a bull with a higher accuracy is going to have more potential to perform better in those environments than a bull with lower accuracy. Is that kind of across the board what we're looking at?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a higher accuracy, you're going to have less possible change in those EPDs. I would say the best a commercial cattleman can do in terms of helping control that accuracy or that animal and how he's going to perform in your environment is to buy your bulls from somebody who's raising them in a similar environment, whether that's regionally or type of grass or just temperature or how much feed you feed them. Find someone who's raising bulls in a manner in which you raise your cattle. And go buy your bulls from those producers.
Yeah, excellent point. Okay, so let's put all the information together. We've got phenotype, we've got past actual performance from that dam or that sire that bull is out of, whether that be weights or feed efficiency, fertility, whatever our actual real life results are. And then we've also got the genetic side, whether that be through genetically enhanced EPDs or other testing. How can buyers take all that information, put it together? They're looking at those animals, they're looking at the data, they're looking at, they're talking to the breeder that they're buying them from. How can they make the best selection with all that information that they have?
It's a lot. And honestly, it gets to be overwhelming. I mean, and we keep adding to it, we don't take away from it. So you wind up with, maybe 30 data points on every bull. You have his individual performance, you have all of his EPDs, you have the accuracies, you have indexes. You would, ideally love to go see his mom, look at his mother's performance records. There's so much information. It gets really, really difficult, honestly, for a commercial cattleman. And it can be kind of overwhelming when you go to a bull sale or you pick up a catalog and you're like, there's so many abbreviations. I don't even know what half of these are. I would say find a seed stock producer that you trust, that you know is doing a great job or you believe is doing a great job, and go to them and say, hey, sit down with them. And seed stock producers love this. I loved when I was selling bulls to get the right bull matched to the right commercial cattleman. So talk through what are your goals and objectives? Are you keeping females? How much calvinese do you need? How do you market your calves? Tell them everything so that they can sit down and at least give you a short list of bulls that will match what your needs are. Don't think that you're just out there on your own because these seed stock guys are really there to help you. And if you find the right seed stock producer, take all your information to them and have them help you whittle it down, I think is the easiest way to do it. If you're trying to do that yourself, I'm a big fan of indexes because it's the best way to make multi-trait genetic improvement. But you need to know what those indexes are made up of. Don't go using an index because it's the biggest fad, coolest thing in the industry, and it doesn't apply to your operation. So make sure you're using the correct index and you understand exactly what's in that index if you're going to go and use one of those.
Yeah, love that. So not to poke holes into something, but we see sometimes where bulls have excellent numbers, excellent pedigree, excellent data. When you go look at it, you're like, that bull just doesn't look like he is built that way. What do you rely upon? What do you go to? How do you make that decision when not all of it is matching up the way that it seems it should?
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot. I went to, a bull sale this weekend, and you look at bulls and you say, man, I love his numbers, but phenotypically, he doesn't look like I want them to look necessarily. So then you got to evaluate, is he sound enough to breed cows? Is his daughter's going to be sound enough? I struggle because we've grown up showing everything, showing cattle, showing it all. I love an animal that looks good, but from a commercial cattleman's perspective, I have a really difficult time of putting that into perspective. How much value should I place on phenotype? I like moderate, wide, deep, thick-made cattle, but they're not the high-number cattle generally. And the high-number cattle are very often a little bigger frame than I like, a little flatter made than I like. So it becomes a really difficult balancing act, and that's why those ones that do have both, they bring a lot of money because they're a hard beast to make. And he may be lot 186 in the sale, and generally commercial cattlemen find that bull and he's going to bring a lot of money. You hope they don't, and you're going to steal one at the end of the sale, but
Right.
if they look good and they have good numbers, they're really hard to make and they're going to bring good money. So I personally struggle with how much emphasis do I put on phenotype? How much emphasis do I put on number? And I think it's really a personal decision. How good do you want that bull to look? I mean, are you the kind of person that enjoys going outside and looking at that bull and say, man, he looks really good. I don't care what his numbers are. Or are you the kind of person that says, I'm going by the numbers and I don't care so much what he looks like as long as he's sound? And that is a difficult balancing act for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of times too. I'm sure that as as more testing is done, as more people learn how to use this technology, they can make better decisions and have more of that those pieces line up. But I know it also probably comes down to, what is your goal, and is it okay if you don't accomplish that goal? Are you going out there to have the bull with the highest numbers regardless of his phenotype, or do you want a bull that balances it, or do you want a bull that looks good and the production is what it is? And I think that's kind of what you're alluding to of, what are you comfortable with spending the money on, because what's most important to you in that selection process?
Definitely.
So going on the flip side then, what should bull buyers avoid when they're evaluating a bull, whether that's phenotype or that's genetic data? Anything that they're looking at, either red flags or just what to be aware of that might be contrary to what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think, you're not going to go out there and, like you said, the really good bulls, the bulls that do it all, they're going to bring all the money. They're going to bring a whole lot of money. So they're hard to get a hold of. I think breeding can be more of an art. And what you're trying to do is really find that bull that complements your needs. So you need to kind of have some kind of analysis, whether it's objectively or subjectively in your mind, of what the strengths and weaknesses of your cow herd are. And then what bull's going to complement that the best? So I think a lot of times producers get stuck in the rut of, I always go buy the Cabanese bull or the high growth bull or the high marbling bull. And you do that over and over and over for year after year. And eventually it no longer is what you need because your herd has enough of that already built in. You need to buy the complement to that. So I think that would be my best advice to a commercial cattleman is, honestly and objectively, measure the strengths and weaknesses of your cow herd. What do you need to compensate for or best complement? And then go find that bull. And he may be the opposite of the bull you bought last year in many ways. And I think that's fine. You need to build that complementarity in order to ultimately hit that sweet spot in your herd that balances out both maternal production and performance.
Very good point. You mentioned the indexes a little bit ago. If producers are brand new to that or just unfamiliar with it, can you highlight some of the indexes that are the most common or the ones that might be on the extremes that people should just be pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, no matter the breed, almost every breed has some sort of a very terminal type index. So, it'll be a measure of generally feedlot performance and carcass value or carcass performance. And I've seen a lot of commercial cattlemen get caught in that rut where they're chasing that, but they're selling calves at weaning, which makes almost zero sense. If you're selling your calves at weaning, yes, we want to do the right thing for the beef industry. We want to produce a good product, but you're not necessarily directly getting paid for feedlot performance and carcass performance unless you have buyers who say, I will pay you more for those calves because I know they're going to perform well for me. That's great. But I guess that would be my one challenge is to look at the right index. If what gets you paid is more of a maternal index that means your females get bred, they last a long time in the herd, they wean a high percent of their body weight, then look at those more maternal type indexes and not necessarily put all your eggs on just that terminal index. So pretty much every breed has what I would call a more maternal type index and a more terminal type index. Just be sure no matter what breed you're using, you do your research, you can go to that breed association's website, you can read what those indexes are made up of. Maybe it's even in the bull sale catalog, but just know what you're doing so that it's actually adding profit and value to your commercial operation.
Love it. Anything else that you think is relevant to the conversation that you hear questions about, that you talk to producers about, especially on the commercial side when it comes to genetic testing, bull evaluation, making those educated decisions?
I mean, I think one thing we do a lot of, and I think a lot of commercial cattlemen are surprised that it even exists, is that when I say go pick out the bull that complements your herd the best, there's actually genomic testing for commercial cattlemen so you can figure out where your herd is at. So a lot of people will test those replacement females so they can get an idea of their strengths and weaknesses. And then they'll take that information to the bull buyer or to the seed stock producer and say, here's the type of bull I need because here's the cows I have. So it gives you an objective way to make that decision rather than just what you think might be going on in your cow herd. So that's a tool out there that does exist that I don't think most commercial cattlemen even know is out there.
Yeah. And that's gonna give you a lot of information to make those solid decisions versus even just using past history that you may or may not remember accurately.
Sure. Yep. Definitely.
Very good. Well, Nick, thanks so much for that insight. I know the whole concept of genetics is something that we could spend all day digging into the details of it, and we're still studying, still understanding. But I think what most commercial cattlemen need to focus on is, like you said, finding that ideal C stock producer, having the information that is going to apply to them, and then trying to find what their goal is and find the bull that fits that the best.
Yep, I think that's true. Find the seed stock producer you trust and don't be afraid to ask questions and let them help guide you.
Love it. Beautiful.